Assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gaur. Gangas festive ring, the volume in the Bhagavatam, which deals with Lord Shiva, Krishna Shivratri.
O Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tad Drishtva Mitunam Jata Rishayo Brahma Badina Uchu Parama Santushta Viditva Bhagavat Kalam Tadrishtva Mitunam Jatam Vishayo Brahma Badina Uchu Parama Santushta Viditva Bhagavat Kalam Tadrishtva Mitunam Jatam Vishayo Brahma Vadina Uchu Parama Santushta Viditva Bhagavat Kalam Tat, that, Drishtva, seeing, Mitunam, couple, Jatam, born, Rishaya, the great sages, Brahmavadina, very learned in Vedic knowledge, Ucho, said, Parama, very much, Sandhushta, being pleased, Viditva, knowing, Bhagavat, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kalam, expansion, translation, the great sages were highly learned in Vedic knowledge, when they saw the male and female born of the arms of Vena's body, they were very pleased, for they could understand that the couple was an expansion of the plenary portion of Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is text 2, and there's a number of verses in there that have very brief purports, starting with the first one that has no purport. So I'll just read some of the verses through. Text 1, the great sage Maitreya continued, my dear Vidura, thus the Brahmanas and the great sages again turned the two arms of King Vena's dead body. As a result, a male and female couple came out of his arms. And in today's verse, the great sages were highly learned in Vedic knowledge. When they saw the male and female born of the arms of Vena's body, they were very pleased, for they could understand that the couple was an expansion of a plenary portion of Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Report, the method adopted by the great sages and scholars who were learned in Vedic knowledge was perfect. They removed all the reactions of King Vena's sinful activities by seeing that King Vena first gave birth to Bahuka, described in the previous chapter. After King Vena's body was thus purified, a male and female came out of it, and the great sages could understand that this was an expansion of Lord Vishnu. This expansion, of course, was not Vishnu Tattva, but a specifically empowered expansion of Lord Vishnu known as Avesha. So this is described further on, more specifically, the different types of incarnations. And this particular Avesha incarnation. Text 3. The great sages said, the male is a plenary expansion of the power of Lord Vishnu, who maintains the entire universe. And the female is a plenary expansion of the goddess of fortune, who is never separated from the Lord. Report, the significance of the goddess of fortune's never being separated from the Lord is clearly mentioned herein. People in the material world are very fond of the goddess of fortune, and they want her, favor, in the form of riches. They should know, however, that the goddess of fortune is inseparable from Lord Vishnu. Materialists should understand that the goddess of fortune should be worshipped along with Lord Vishnu and should not be regarded separately. Materialists seeking the favor of the goddess of fortune must worship Lord Vishnu and Lakshmi together to maintain material opulence. If a materialist follows the policy of Ravana, who wanted to separate Sita from Lord Ramchandra, the process of separation will vanquish him. Those who are very rich and have taken favor of the goddess of fortune in this world must engage their money in the service of the Lord. In this way, they can continue their opulent position without disturbance. Text 4. Of the two, the male will be able to expand his reputation throughout the world. His name will be Prithu. Indeed, he will be the first among kings. Purport, there are different types of incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Shastras, it is said that Garuda, the carrier of Lord Vishnu, and Lord Shiva, and Ananta, are all very powerful incarnations of the Brahman feature of the Lord. Similarly, Shachipati, or Indra, the king of heaven, is an incarnation of the lusty feature of the Lord. Aniruddha is an incarnation of the Lord's mind. Similarly, King Prithu is an incarnation of the ruling force of the Lord. Thus, the saintly persons and the great sages predicted the future activities of King Prithu, who is already explained as a partial incarnation of a plenary expansion of the Lord. Text 5. The female has such beautiful teeth and beautiful qualities that she will actually beautify the ornaments she wears. Her name will be Archie. In the future, she will accept King Prithu as her husband. Text 6. In the form of King Prithu, the Supreme Personality of God has appeared through a part of his potency to protect the people of the world. The goddess of fortune is the constant companion of the Lord, and therefore she has incarnated partially as Archie to become Prithu's queen. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that whenever one sees an extraordinary power, he should conclude that a specific partial representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is present. There are innumerable such personalities, but not all of them are direct Vishnu-tattva plenary expansions of the Lord. Many living entities are classified among the Shakti-tattvas. Such incarnations, empowered for specific purposes, are known as Shaktyavesh avatars. King Prithu was such a Shaktyavesh avatar of the Lord. Similarly, Archie, King Prithu's wife, was a Shaktyavesh avatar of the goddess of fortune. So, Shakti and in the purport for text 2, Prabhupada mentioned specifically that King Prithu was Avesha. And here in this purport it's mentioned there are Shakti Tattvas, or put the two together, Shaktyavesh. Shakti means specifically a particular potency of the Lord. A jiva soul can be considered an incarnation of the Lord in certain circumstances. and that circumstance is being described here, or an example of it is being presented, that of King Prithu, because he was being endowed with a very specific potency. The term is used, plenary expansion of the Lord, or a portion of a plenary portion, or a partial expansion. This term plenary has to do with Lord Vishnu. Whenever you hear the term plenary expansion, or a portion of a plenary portion, that indicates the three Vishnu expansions, Mahavishnu, Karvadakshaya Vishnu, and Chirdakshaya Vishnu. So these Vishnu expansions are endowed with, as we find in Nectar of Devotion, a certain number of qualities of the Lord in full. There are 64 qualities that are mentioned that are Lord Krishna's qualities, and Lord Vishnu possesses 60 of those 64 qualities. Jiva soul possesses a certain number, and then further Lord Shiva, then further Lord Vishnu. And each of these Vishnu expansions, this is all technical information, but these Vishnu expansions are equal to Krishna, with the exception of these four particular qualities. Otherwise, the four qualities that are specifically ascribed to Krishna's pastimes. Otherwise, the Vishnu Tattva expansions, they're complete. They're as potent, like the example is given of lighting so many candles from an original candle. Each candle has the same candle power to fill the whole room, like we do in Janmashtami. Fill the room, the altar filled with candles. And each candle has the same candle power. So also, then the Vishnu expansions, they're also God. Then there's a portion of a plenary portion, which can also mean an expansion of one of these Vishnu expansions. And this is King Prithu's case, where one of the qualities of the Lord is endowed, or in being invested, or directly empowered. Jiva soul is being empowered by that potency fully to act the same as the Lord in all respects, at least in this particular aspect of the Lord. So that's Shaktivesh. Shakti is a power, one power or potency of the Lord. And in the second verse's purport, that's what this term avesha means, an expansion that is specifically endowed with the potency of the Lord. It's mentioned in the purport to text 6. So when you write tomorrow's verse down, you know which one to write. But there are different incarnations that are expansions of other aspects of the Lord. Mentioned here are included Garuda, Lord Shiva, and Ananta. But these are all very powerful incarnations of the Brahman feature of the Lord. Or King Indra is an expansion or incarnation of the lusty feature of the Lord. So King Prithu, the specific Shakti or potency of the Lord that he is representative of, or he is being endowed with, is the ruling force of the Lord. It's perfectly appropriate because that's what's needed. What the sages and brahmanas were calling upon was a ruler who could give proper direction to the society. They were particularly concerned in this way. So, we'll see if somewhere in here the quotes that Gauranga came up with, that further description is given of Lord Shiva's position, how it is that he is a one of these Avesha incarnations. So I'm going to read some things about Lord Shiva. You know, it's pretty quick. Lord Shiva is addressed as Abhava, or one who is never born, although generally he is known as Bhava, one who is born. Rudra, Lord Shiva, is actually born from between the eyes of Brahma, who is called Swayambhu, because he is not born from any human being or material creature, but is born directly from the lotus flower which grows from the abdomen of Lord Vishnu. When Lord Shiva is addressed here as Abhava, this may be taken to mean one who has never felt material miseries. Sati wanted to impress upon her husband that even those who were not related to her father were also going. This is the sacrifice that her father was arranging. To say nothing of herself, who was intimately related with him. Lord Shiva is addressed here as blue-throated. Lord Shiva drank an ocean of poison and kept it in his throat, not swallowing it or allowing it to go down his stomach, and thus the throat became blue. Since then he has been known as Nilakanta, or blue-throated. The reason that Lord Shiva drank an ocean of poison was for others' benefit. When the ocean was churned by the demigods and demons, the churning at first produced poison. So, because the poisonous ocean might have affected others who are not advanced, Lord Shiva drank all the ocean water. In other words, he could drink such a great amount of poison for others' benefit. And now, since his wife was personally requesting him to go to her father's house, even if he did not wish to give that permission, he should do so out of his great kindness. There's a point being made here that Lord Shiva is sometimes, or is generally known as Bhava, a term that applies to any living entity that is born. In other words, it's describing the embodied state. But Lord Shiva's position is not exactly the same embodied state as all of the living entities. Therefore, he's called Abhava. He appears in a most unusual way. He appears in a moment of anger of Lord Brahma and just pops out of his form. Between his furrowed eyebrows at that time of anger. In the same way that Lord Brahma is described as unborn, Swayambhu or Aja, one who appears without mother and father, the unborn, Lord Brahma, because he appears in the navel, from the lotus flower growing from the navel of Lord Vishnu. So without mother and father, that's Lord Brahma. Same for Lord Shiva. Although he does make his appearance. And now I'll read from something further about Lord Shiva. This is from chapter 6 of the fourth canto. And Lord Brahma is speaking to an assembly at a sacrificial arena. Many, many sages and saintly persons are present. Indra is present. Many other demigods and saintly personalities are all assembled there. After Lord Brahma advised the demigods to go to Lord Shiva and beg his pardon, it was suggested how he could be satisfied and how the matter could be placed before him. Brahma also asserted that none of the conditioned souls, including himself and all the demigods, could know how to satisfy Lord Shiva. But he said, "It is known that he is very easily satisfied, so let us try to satisfy him by falling down at his lotus feet." Actually, the position of the subordinate is always to surrender to the Supreme. That is the instruction of Bhagavad Gita. The Lord asks everyone to give up all kinds of concocted occupations and simply surrender unto him. That will protect the conditioned souls from all sinful reactions. Similarly, in this case, Brahma also suggested that they go and surrender unto the lotus feet of Lord Shiva, for since he is very kind and very easily satisfied, this action would prove effective. So following this advice of Lord Brahma, what follows is a description of the demigods getting in an airplane and going to Lord Shiva's planet and describing, as they were coming in for a landing, the appearance of Lord Shiva's planet and how Lord Shiva was sitting in meditation on the Supreme Lord. Nice description. After this instruction, all the demigods, the pitas, and the lords of the living entities, and Lord Brahma took them with him and left for the abode of Lord Shiva known as Kailas Hill. Purport, the abode of Lord Shiva, which is known as Kailas, is described in the 14 verses which follow, starting with text 9. The abode known as Kailas is full of different herbs and vegetables, and it is sanctified by Vedic hymns and mystic yoga practice. Thus, the residents of that abode are demigods by birth and have all mystic powers. Besides them, there are other human beings who are known as Kinnaras and Gandharvas, who are accompanied by their beautiful wives, who are known as Apsaras, or angels. It doesn't give a description of these forms. Kailas is full of mountains with all kinds of valuable jewels and minerals, and surrounded by all varieties of valuable trees and plants. On top of the hill is nicely decorated by various types of deer. There are many waterfalls, and in the mountains there are many beautiful caves in which the very beautiful wives of the mystics are found. On Kailas Hill there is always the rhythmical sound of the peacock's sweet vibrations and the bees humming. Cuckoos are always singing and other birds whisper amongst themselves. There are tall trees with straight branches that appear to call the sweet birds, and when the herds of elephants pass through the hills, it appears that Kailas Hill moves with them. When the waterfalls resound, it appears that Kailas Hill does also. The whole of Kailas Hill is decorated with various kinds of trees, of which the following names may be mentioned: Mandara, Parijata, Sarala, Tamala, Tala, Kovidara, Asana, Arjuna, Amarajati or Mango, Kadamba, Nduli Kadamba, Naga, Punaga, Champaka, Patala, Ashoka, Bakula, Kunda and Kurabaka. The entire hill is decorated with such trees which produce flowers with fragrant aromas. There are also trees which decorate the hill, such as the golden lotus flower, the cinnamon tree, Malati, Kubja, Malika, and Madhavi. Kailas Hill is also decorated with such trees as Kata, jackfruit, Jalara, banyan trees, Plakshas, Nyagrodhas, and trees producing Asafoetida. Also there are trees of betel nuts and Burja Patra, as well as Rajapuga, blackberries, and similar other trees. There are mango trees, Priyala, Mudhaka, and Inguda. Besides these, there are other trees, like thin bamboos, Kichaka, and varieties of other bamboo trees, all decorating the tract of Kailas Hill. There are different kinds of lotus flowers, such as Kudumba, Utpala, and Shatapatra. The forest appears to be a decorated garden, and the small lakes are full of various kinds of birds who whisper very sweetly. There are many kinds of other animals also, like deer, monkeys, boars, lions, rikshas, shalyakas, forest cows. Who knows what a forest cow is? Yes? You know what a forest cow is? They look like a horse, and they give... Forest cows. Cows give milk, right? They don't give milk. They must give milk. Forest asses, tigers, small deer, buffalo, and many other animals who are fully enjoying their lives. There are varieties of deer such as Karnantra, Ekapada. Ekapada? One-legged deer? Don't know that one. Yes, but these are deer. But a ghost travels by moving on one foot. Thank you, Grandpa. We really needed that. Ashvasya, Vrika, and Kasturi, the deer which bears musk. Besides the deer, there are many banana trees which decorate the small hillside lakes very nicely. There is a small lake named Alakananda in which Sati used to take her bath, and that lake is especially auspicious. All the demigods, after seeing the specially beautiful, the specific beauty of Kailas Hill, were struck with wonder at the great opulence to be found there. Although Lord Shiva is known to be very, very austere, and his associates also not the most opulent at all, quite the contrary. Although Lord Shiva has these opulences which he can bestow, it's a complete contrast to how we normally picture Lord Shiva smeared with ashes and dressed very simply. According to the commentary, this is a purport, Srila Prabhupada. According to the commentary called Sri Bhagavat Chandra Chandrika, the water in which Sati used to bathe was Ganges water. In other words, the Ganges flowed through the Kailash Parvata. There is every possibility of accepting such a statement because Ganges water also flows from the hair of Lord Shiva. Since Ganges water rests on the head of Lord Shiva and then flows to other parts of the universe, it is quite possible that the water in which Sati bathed, which was certainly very nicely scented, was Ganges water. Who knows the story of Lord Shiva catching the Ganges water with his hair? Then Vamanadeva poked his second step through the beyond all the different planetary systems and through the layers of the universe. He poked a hole in the crust, the outer layer of the universe, and the sacred river began pouring in to the universe, which would have destroyed the planets. So Lord Shiva captured this in his hair, and then it was distributed to different places throughout the universe. Yes? I can't hear you. To free his forefathers, the A-train is rumbling. Since Ganges water rests on the head of Lord Shiva and then flows to other parts of the universe, it is quite possible that the water in which Sati bathed, which was certainly very nicely scented, was Ganges water. Thus the demigod saw the wonderful beauty, thus the demigod saw the wonderfully beautiful region known as Alaka in the forest, known as Sogandhika, which means full of fragrance. The forest is known as Sogandhika because of its abundance of lotus flowers. Report, sometimes Alaka is known as Alakapuri, which is also the name of the abode of Kuvera. Kuvera's abode, however, cannot be seen from Kailash. Therefore, the region of Alaka referred to here is different from Alakapuri of Kuvera. According to Vairaghava Acharya, Alaka means uncommonly beautiful. In the region of Alaka, the demigod saw, there is a type of lotus flower known as Sogandhika that distributes an especially fragrant scent. Text 24. They also saw the two rivers named Nanda and Alakananda. These two rivers are sanctified by the dust of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda. My dear Kshata, Vidura, the celestial damsels come down to those rivers in their airplanes with their husbands, and after sexual enjoyment they enter the water and enjoy sprinkling their husbands with water. After the damsels of the heavenly planets bathe in the water, it becomes yellowish and fragrant due to the kumkum from their bodies. Thus the elephants come to bathe there with their wives, the she-elephants, and they also drink the water, although they are not thirsty. The airplanes of the heavenly denizens are bedecked with pearls, gold, and many valuable jewels. The heavenly denizens are compared to clouds in the sky, decorated with occasional flashes of electric lightning. There's some description here of the airplanes. Not exactly like Air India. While traveling, the demigods passed over the forest known as Sogandhika, which is full of varieties of flowers, fruits, and desire trees. While passing over the forest, they also saw the regions of Yaksheshwara. Report, Yaksheshwara is also known as Kuvera, and he is the treasurer of the demigods In the descriptions of him in Vedic literature, it is stated that he is fabulously rich. It appears from these verses that Kailash is situated near the residential quarters of Kuvera. It is also stated here that the forest was full of desire trees. In Brahma Samhita, we learn about the desire tree, which is found in the spiritual world, especially in Krishna Loka, the abode of Lord Krishna. We learn here that such desire trees are also found in Kailash, the residence of Lord Shiva, by the grace of Krishna. It thus appears that Kailash has a special significance. It is almost like the residence of Lord Krishna. Just a few more verses describing Lord Shiva's abode. In that celestial forest there were many birds whose necks were colored reddish and whose sweet sound mixed with the humming of the bees. The lakes were abundantly decorated with crying swans as well as strong-stemmed lotus flowers. Report: the beauty of the forest was intensified by the presence of various lakes. It is described herein that the lakes were decorated with lotus flowers and with swans who played and sang with the birds and the humming bees. Considering all these attributes, one can imagine how beautiful the spot was and how much the demigods passing through enjoyed the atmosphere. There are many paths and beautiful spots created by man on this planet Earth, but none of them can surpass those of Kailash as they are described in these verses. Passing by such lakes, the demigods reached a place where there was a great banyan tree, and then it describes that she was sitting under the banyan tree in his meditation. We have another 5 minutes. This is that purport, Mark? Wow. That banyan tree was 800 miles high. And its branches spread over 600 miles around. The tree cast a fine shade, which permanently cooled the temperature, yet there was no noise of birds. The demigod saw that she was sitting under that tree, which was competent to give perfection to mystic yogis and deliver all people as great as time eternal. He appeared to have given up all anger. The demigods were going to see Lord Shiva because just previously he had become very angry, but now he appeared pacified. Lord Shiva sat there surrounded by saintly persons like Kuvera, the master of the Kuryakas, and the four Kumaras who were already liberated souls. Lord Shiva was very grave and saintly. The demigods saw Lord Shiva situated in his perfection as the master of the senses, knowledge, fruitive activities, and the path of achieving perfection. He was the friend of the entire world, and by virtue of his full affection for everyone, he was very auspicious. He was seated on a deerskin and was practicing all forms of austerity. Because his body was smeared with ashes, he looked like an evening cloud. On his hair was the sign of a half moon, a symbolic representation. He was seated on a straw mattress and speaking to all present, including the great sage Narada, to whom he specifically spoke about the absolute truth. His left leg was placed on his right thigh, and his left hand was placed on his left thigh. In his right hand he held Rudraksha beads. This sitting posture is called Virasana. He sat in the Virasana posture, and his finger was in the mode of argument. All the sages and demigods, headed by Indra, offered their respectful obeisances unto Lord Shiva with folded hands. Lord Shiva was dressed in saffron garments and absorbed in trance, thus appearing to be the foremost of all sages. Lord Shiva's lotus feet were worshipped by both the demigods and demons. But still, in spite of his exalted position, as soon as he saw Lord Brahma, was there among all the other demigods, immediately stood up and offered his respect by bowing down and touching his lotus feet, just as Vamanadeva offered his respectful obeisances to Kashyapa Muni. All the sages who were sitting with Lord Shiva, such as Narada and others, also offered their respectful obeisances to Lord Brahma. After being so worshipped, Lord Brahma, smiling, began to speak to Lord Shiva. It's almost 8:30. Any discussion or point someone wants to bring up? I'll just read this. There's part of one purport that's from chapter 24. In civilized society, there must be divisions of Brahmin and Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra, and everyone must properly execute his occupational duty in accordance with his division. Here is described Svadharma Nishtha, that it does not matter whether one is a Brahmin, a Kshatriya, Vaishya or Shudra. If one sticks to his position and properly executes his particular duty, he is considered a civilized human being. Otherwise, he is no better than an animal. Here, Prabhupada is describing Shiva Loka, or Sada Shiva Loka, which is situated in a marginal position between the spiritual and material worlds. If, after being situated in Brahma Loka, one becomes more qualified, he is promoted to Sadashiva Loka. Similarly, when one becomes even more qualified, he can attain the Vaikuntha Lokas. The Vaikuntha Lokas are targets for everyone, even the demigods, and they can be attained by a devotee who has no desire for material benefit. One is not safe. As indicated in Bhagavad Gita, one does not escape material miseries even if he is elevated to Brahma Loka, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka, Purnar Arvartin Arjuna. Similarly, one is not very safe even if he is promoted to Shiva Loka, because the planet of Shiva Loka is marginal. We'll have to stop.